This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:48 a.m., you're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Shauning and Mark. Now, mention sovereign funds and Norway's government global pension pretty much comes to mind, could be the first thing that comes to mind. It's considered one of the largest wealth funds in the world and also one of the best managed with $1.4 trillion U.S. dollars portfolio. It did suffer a bad year in 2022, losing a record $164 billion.
Singapore's $500 billion soaring fund Temasek Holdings also suffered a blip when it lost $275 million last year, writing off the investment after the collapse of crypto exchange FTX in November 2022.
Is it a blip? That's quite a lot of money. But anyway, not to say that Malaysia hasn't had its fair share of controversies. Khazanah recorded an impairment loss of 7.3 billion ringgit in 2018 due to the underperformance of Malaysian Airlines and Telekom Malaysia. Of course, we have our very own 1MDB, which was a sovereign fund. And of course, we know money was stolen from it. So how do we ensure that sovereign funds keep to their investment mandates and generate the required returns? What can be done to ensure better transparency for their investment decisions?
Joining us today for some thoughts on governance and accountability of sovereign funds is Elsa Satkunasingam, Senior Business Development Advisor for Corporate and Sustainability Governance at the Asia School of Business. Elsa, good morning. Thank you so much for joining us. Let's start with getting the basic understanding of what is the role of government-linked investment corporations such as Temasek or the Norway Global Pension Fund and Malaysia's Khazanah National. You know, what responsibilities do they hold to their respective countries?
Good morning. Well, sovereign wealth funds actually are here to preserve the wealth of their respective nations for current and future generations. And so what they do is they ensure that the nation's wealth, you know, obtained from revenues, it's safeguarded and used responsibly for development and also to buffer for future economic downturns that the nation might suffer. So what they do is they take these revenues, they invest it, and then they use the income earned for, you know, education, healthcare, or anything else on the nation's agenda.
Now, this Monday, the Temasek chairman announced that it cut the pay of the team responsible for investing in the now bankrupt FTX cryptocurrency exchange. What do you think led to this decision, and will this set a precedent for future cases?
It's interesting that you asked that question, because at the Asia School of Business, we've actually published a short opinion piece for executive education participants on FTX. So FTX is actually touted as a tech unicorn, yeah? And in 2020 and 2021, during the tech boom, there's a lot of money pouring into tech companies and, you know, cryptocurrencies sky high. So well-known investors like Sequoia Capital, Vision Fund, BlackRock invested in FTX. If you haven't heard of Sequoia Capital, it's actually a very successful venture capitalist firm. It's invested in Apple, Google, LinkedIn, etc. So I think that's maybe one of the reasons why Temasek made similar investments. As for this decision against senior management to cut their compensation, you know, Temasek issued a statement stating that they had carried out due diligence for 8 months, and that FTX audited financial statements showed that it was profitable. Mm. But we know now that FTX was chaotic. It was a real mess. It didn't even have basic accounting systems in place for a company that was valued at $25 billion at that time. So I do think there was an issue with due diligence, and I think that the reason why they took this action against the senior management is not just because there's a lot of egg on the faces of investors, larger investors, but another reason is the public look at Temasek as a very trusted brand name. So where Temasek invests, the public is willing to go into that business as investors or consumers. Mm. And because Temasek put its name behind FTX, people went in to trade on FTX and then, you know, made huge losses. So I think that was the reason for the action to drive to Temasek that they are a trusted brand name and they need to guard their reputation very carefully.
Which then begs the wider question, right? So how should members of public like ourselves, because it is in some way our money, assess a sovereign fund's performance when investment decisions are often opaque and staff compensation is rarely made known?
Okay, I think that's it's difficult to get that information because you can find it in their annual report and public sources,
yes,
right?
But except for Norges, all the other funds don't usually give you the level of detail. Norges is the only one which states all, every single investment that they make.
Yes, I agree with that. So it will be difficult. However, there is a document that the Ministry of Finance issued last year. It's known as the Principles of Good Governance for Government-Linked Investment Companies. And that's issued by the MOF for the GLICs under the MOF, right? So that will actually require a far greater level of disclosure. I'm not sure whether they will disclose to you the actual investment decisions, but definitely there'll be a higher, if this document is implemented, there'll be a much higher level of disclosure about investments, you know, financial, non-financial information that's material. As for staff compensation, they might disclose it in aggregate. But to be fair, even the listed companies, you know, they're required to disclose the salaries of the top five senior management in bands of 50,000, and many of them are still not doing it. So I don't know if the sovereign wealth funds will do it under this new document.
Right. So you mentioned that there is these new guidelines. Do you think that in general, should sovereign funds be held to the same standards of public disclosure as the central bank and Securities Commission regulated financial institutions?
I do. And if this document is implemented, as I've said, it will, because it actually requires disclosure about financial, non-financial information and governance information. And the disclosure should be made in the annual report, and it should be aligned to the disclosures of the public listed companies. So if it's implemented by the MOF, you know, followed through, and they say they will monitor, then we will be getting this kind of information in future, I hope.
Now, Elsa, how do sovereign funds appoint board members and senior management team to ensure high standards of corporate governance and internal controls are upheld?
At the moment, we don't really know, because what we do know is who the members of the board and senior management are. We know their background, we know their qualifications, but we don't know the process of appointment, the criteria. We don't know if they have performed, achieved the KPIs and things like that. So we don't know. And again, this would be the you know, the magical document if it's implemented. It's like the Malaysian Code on Corporate Governance and how it has changed and brought up the levels of governance from the first time it was issued in 2000 till now. If this document is implemented strictly by the ministry, we will be getting that information. Because interestingly, this document follows a lot of the high-level principles in the Malaysian Code on Corporate Governance. You're required to have independent board members, no active politicians on the board, or not at least discouraged. You also have an audit committee, remuneration committee, you know, very similar guidelines as the Malaysian Code on Corporate Governance. So hopefully we'll know in future, but at the moment, we don't.
Okay, because we've got seven well-known government-linked investment corporations. And I'll be honest, the performance has been somewhat mixed over the years. How do we ensure that they stick to their mandate? Because sometimes they're seen as organizations which are used to bail out companies.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's it's kind of like a million-dollar question of how we're going to move forward. I do think at the moment we have a mix. We have a mix of really good people who should be there on the boards and senior management. And we do have some politicians. I think that we need, moving forward, what needs to be done is that we really need to go for the best talent and we need to select them based on their capabilities and their skills. So the conundrum is when there's a politician who's quite capable. My view is even if that politician is capable of running the GLC, the answer is don't appoint him or her because of the perception of conflict of interest. The public perception is the politician will look after his or her political party and not the company, you know, on which they are supposed to manage. that may be wrong, but it's not about actual conflict. It's about public perception.
Elsa, thank you very much for speaking with us. That was Elsa Satkunasingam, Senior Business Development Advisor at the Asia School of Business, weighing in on the kinds of measures needed for sovereign wealth funds to be accountable and transparent to the public that they serve.
Yeah, I really like the idea that if you don't hit your mandated returns and you didn't conduct a good level of due diligence on the company and the investments kind of, you know, egg on your face, yeah, perhaps there should be a clawback on your salary and bonus, especially because
the public relies on that really good reputation of the Sovereign Wealth Fund. Yeah, she made that point that people invested in FTX because the Massey put their backing behind it.
Yes, and of course, you don't want any political appointees to any of these glicks.
All right, 7:59 in the morning. We're heading into the 8 a.m. news bulletin. But after that, on The Breakfast Grill, Wong Xiaoning is going to be speaking to Rebecca Tan, CEO of Generali Life Insurance Malaysia. Stay tuned for that conversation, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.